All right, we're going to get going here. I think we're going to change the order a little bit and start in on House Files 826 and 666. We're not going to be moving either of those bills today. We're just going to hear them and work through the issues, as it were. And I know, why don't we start with 826, and if Sarah Van Winkle wants to just come up and start, is she here? Yes, sorry, thank you. Yes, yes, so that's the, if you, are you testifying in favor of the bill or in opposition, do you know? Okay, why don't you come up and start then? So. Welcome to the committee. So this is 826 members.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Van Winkle, and I'm a home care director for Siloam Community Alliance in St. Louis Park. I'm here to testify in support of HF 826, the Continuity of Care Act. To give you some very brief background, this bill relates to Minnesota's Elderly Waiver Program, which funds home and community-based services for people age 65 and older who are eligible for medical assistance and require the level of care provided in a nursing home, but choose to remain in the community. The Minnesota Department of Human Services operates the EW program under a federal waiver to Minnesota's Medicaid state plan, and counties administer the program. Among other things, EW pays for bundled packages of services called customized living and 24-hour customized living. These bundled services packages are made available to senior buildings and include various supportive and health-related services needed by EW recipients. This bill proposes changes in requirements related to home care services for seniors that are designed to, number one, enable home care clients to live independently as long as possible, number two, maximize continuity of care for seniors needing home care services, number three, promote continued access to community-based services for frail elderly, and number four, provide for fair and appropriate reimbursement for providers serving elderly waiver customized living clients. There's three parts to this bill, and then I'd like to go with the first part, is allow additional providers to offer alternative care services to streamline access for clients. Alternative care clients would have more access to needed services if the services could be provided by licensed home care providers. In 2005, the alternative care program was amended to eliminate monthly packages of services by licensed home care providers. As a result, only a Medicare-certified home care agency can provide these services on a fee-for-service basis. This means that residents who need a service provided under alternative care, but who live in an assisted living center, must find another agency who is Medicare-certified to come to the center and provide these services. Allowing Siloam Home Care in St. Louis Park, a licensed home care agency, to provide alternative care services to our residents means our residents will have access to services they need to remain independent. And here's an example. Yeah.
And can I just say, what, in 2007 you said, or 2005 you said?
2005.
And what was the reason for that change?
I think it was budgetary. They needed to find some money, and so they cut that. It was cut, like, in the middle of the night kind of thing. We found out the next day.
Okay, thank you.
Here's an example that I see in my practice where this would be something that would be a benefit. Mrs. Jones needs assistance with a shower two times a week due to fall risk. She's not on medical assistance but is eligible for AC. Since my Class F home care agency is not Medicare certified, then I must have the client go through a referral to another home care agency. Since the other agency is not on site, the home health aide would be authorized for a longer visit rather than just the amount of time needed for that aide to go into that client's, do a 30-minute shower. So it typically would be authorized in a higher lump sum. If she was able to access our home health aide, and since we have licensed nursing available on site, the home health aide that is providing regular showers to this client can report immediately any changes in conditions to the nurse on site. This would precipitate an assessment and intervention so that the client could possibly avoid an ER visit or hospitalization. So what I'm saying is that we have home health aides that are on site 24/7, and we have licensed nurse on site. So this home health aide, if they found something going on with this particular client, we could intervene in a quicker manner. Mrs. Jones will develop a relationship with caregivers in the building and have continuity of care, which promotes better quality of care. So that's the one part. The second part is eliminate the customized living cap on elderly waiver services so that clients may choose to obtain all of their authorized services from a single provider. Currently, there's two service rates for clients under the elderly waiver customized living packages. One is the full 24-hour customized living cap for EW clients who qualify for 24-hour supervision. And number two, the second one is a lower customized living cap that is about half the rate for clients who do not meet the 24-hour supervision criteria. Clients sometimes do not meet the 24-hour supervision criteria, but are authorized based on needs assessment by the lead agency to receive services that exceed the customized living cap. These additional services that the client needs must be provided on a fee-for-service basis, which requires a Medicare-certified agency to come in. Most customized living services are provided by non-Medicare home care agencies, meaning their clients must then obtain any additional needed EW services that exceed their customized living cap from a Medicare-certified agency, requiring these clients to obtain services from a second agency is inefficient and disrupts the continuity of care.
Okay, so just so I understand this one, then, a person qualifies for customized living.
Correct.
Under the elderly waiver.
Correct.
And they are the amount they can receive under the waiver is capped at a certain amount.
Correct.
They may also qualify under other services.
Correct.
So they don't qualify for 24-hour.
Right.
So they only get half the rate.
Correct.
But they qualify for other services, and they pay that on a fee for service.
Right.
But it has to be someone different because it has to be Medicare certified and you're Class F.
Correct.
Okay.
All right.
But it's still less than the 24-hour amount.
Right.
Okay.
Or it could go up to the 24-hour
yeah.
rate, too. But here's an example. Mrs. Siegel needs 3 baths a week because she needs a treatment due to a skin condition. When calculating the baths and the plan of care, it exceeds her cap under the lower customized living rate. So she doesn't qualify for the 24 hours, just the customized living. The choices are to have what can be provided done under the custom living amount, and anything else would have to be provided by an outside Medicare certified agency. This is not efficient and provides poor continuity of care to Mrs. Siegel. Mrs. Siegel then refuses her third bath because she's uncomfortable with having another stranger come into her apartment and give her a bath. So then she's at risk of skin complications because she's not receiving her treatment 3 times a week. So that's just an example of what could happen in that particular case. Okay, and then the third
thing. Under the bill, is the cap limited to the 24-hour customized living? So expenses can't go beyond that.
Correct. It's the EW cap that's set. And so no expenses would ever go over that, which is a rate that's set well below what a nursing home rate would be for that individual if they were in the nursing home. So it's cost effective.
Okay,
and then part 3 is allow elderly waiver customized living home care providers to be reimbursed for incidental nursing services in order to better serve increasingly frail clients. Although the EW program will pay for these nursing services on a fee-for-service basis, currently, the EW customized living package permits reimbursement only for medication setups and specifically prohibits the possibility of reimbursement for other services provided by a licensed nurse. The incidental nursing services identified in this provision are services that either by law or by standards of nursing practice cannot be delegated to unlicensed home care staff and must be provided by an LPN or RN. In addition, this provision specifies that the incidental nursing services to be covered by the EW package are those services that are not eligible for Medicare reimbursement. Okay, so in customized living, when we have somebody that is eligible for Medicare home care, by law, we have to refer them to get their Medicare benefits to pay for those home care services. But these are for individuals that don't meet that specific Medicare criteria for home care services. And here's my example for this particular one. Mr. Smith was recently hospitalized, and he wants to return back to a subsidized apartment where there is customized living available. He will need assistance with bathing, dressing changes, and assessment of heel wound 2 times a day, and weekly physician follow-up on an INR blood draws for medication adjustment. Mr. Smith does not meet the qualifiers for Medicare home care. He's not homebound, and he just doesn't meet all those qualifiers. These services are all available at his apartment utilizing our home care program, but there's no reimbursement available to the Class F provider. In order for Mr. Smith to be successful in his transition back to home, he would need 2 times a day dressing changes and monitoring of the wound, close supervision of his INR results with medication changes through close consultation with his physician. These services would need to be provided through an outside Medicare certified home care agency under his MA benefit. It would be more costly to bring in a home health aide for dressing changes than to utilize a home health aide in the building that's already there 24/7. Also, with any changes in the wound, it would be addressed much quicker as the licensed nurse is also available in the building, rather than call a nurse and have a nurse visit under their MA benefit. When dealing with medication dosaging as it relates to blood levels, having the nurse on site, setting them up, monitoring the medications, is much more successful than telling a client on the phone or coming in 1 time per week to monitor medication compliance. Should the outside agency not be able to meet his needs, the other choice for Mr. Smith is to go to the nursing home until his wound is better and his INR is stable. Our services we offer under EW Customized Living provide a holistic approach to those frail elderly that are at risk of nursing home placement. Management of chronic illnesses while keeping our clients in the community is what customized living is all about. We are successful at this because we have developed relationships with clients' families, with clients, and with physicians. We are able to identify any changes in conditions before they become acute and put in place interventions to avoid ER visits, hospitalizations, long-term care placements. This is not only cost-effective, but it also allows our seniors to remain in the community, which is where they want to be, thus enjoying a better quality of life.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Yes, Representative Loffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our speakers. I'd like to understand a little bit more about non-Medicare agencies but from the consumer perspective and whether or not, I know that there's some, you know, evaluation of quality and things like that that you get out of Medicare certification and reporting. I just want to know a little bit about that. And then, if you could, and then the other issue is there's been models that have been used a lot in Europe, and Ling Blungstrom and some others have modeled here where you try and have continuity of care, and typically a person going into customized living would be someone who had already been getting services in the community in their own home, and their need may have grown. And would this prohibit or disadvantage someone who wanted to have that person who was seeing them in their home environment now as their needs increase, as they become more frail, having that same nurse who was visiting their home continue to serve them in the customized living facility?
And before we go, I'm going to just adjourn, or not adjourn, I'm going to start the meeting. So, now the meeting's come to order. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, answering that second part first, because that's the first one in my brain. The client has choice, always has choice. If they want to maintain their same company that they've had, the people that move into our buildings, they can keep that same company and continue with them in our building. But what we find is that The reason they move into the buildings is because they become more frail, and they maybe need to see the nurse more than one time a week. And having a nurse on site to address the changing conditions on a more frequent basis can sometimes catch these chronic illnesses before they skyrocket into something more acute. But once again, it's their choice in customized living. They can stay on their EW and just have their fee-for-service if they want when they move into our building, and they don't get any of the other services, you know, the other pieces, the socialization and the meals and all that. They can choose to do that if they want. As far as Medicare Home Care certified agencies, I guess what you're kind of saying is maybe they're monitored more closely and they're higher quality than a non-Medicare home care agency. I know they go through OASIS and other types of quality assurance that maybe the Class F doesn't go through, but we have very stringent rules that we have to follow, and we also are surveyed by the Minnesota Department of Health, and we have to meet all those requirements. I know that currently I'm trying to get a Medicare certification for a hospice program, and right now they're just not giving out any new Medicare certifications because the states are so behind in their compliance division that they're just trying to keep up with the agencies that are there, so there's not a whole lot of new agencies coming on board. And as these elders are growing, we need to make sure we have agencies available to meet those needs.
Can we have the department come up and talk about their issues on this bill?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
As Ms. Rodegard comes up, I want to let folks know that we have met together to talk about some of the concerns that the Department of Human Services has, and they have met with the advocates, and I understand that those meetings will continue. So, you know, I want to make sure people understand that there are some concerns about this, and I'm committed to working through them as we move forward.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Winkleman. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health, and I see that the Department of Human Services is behind me, but I thought maybe I could add some information here to this discussion about this bill, that the Minnesota Department of Health does license home care agencies in Class A and Class F categories, and also Housing with Services we register. And so there are rules and requirements for those agencies that are not also Medicare certified. And in fact, we did a count recently, but most of the home care providers in Minnesota are not Medicare certified. So maybe that adds some new dimensions to your discussion.
I appreciate that. Can I just ask a question? I have a bill that's part of this whole collection here. And I was reading through the Housing and Services Establishment. Actually, I was looking at it with Representative Broad. And so we have these Housing with Services establishments, and then we have nursing homes, we have certified boarding care homes, we have board and lodging establishments, and then that with shelter for battered women. We have family adult foster care homes. We have residential settings, or DD folks, home sharing arrangements. Why do we have all of these things?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I wish I knew that answer, but I think...
Are they a lot the same? I mean, could we kind of set up a...
I don't think I'm necessarily the expert on
fair enough.
The history of this. I imagine that over time it's a need for a different type of supportive services or different types of building that houses different services. I don't know.
But some of these services actually, there's multiple services housed in the same building too, right?
Right. I mean, the Housing with Services, I think, is what the first testifier alluded to, where you have perhaps several different types or several different home health agencies operating out of that one Housing with Services.
Right.
So that's a possibility.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Abler.
Yeah, just to short version of the question. You mentioned rules that you have to follow. Are those federal rules you're referring to, or are those state rules that we get to fix if we want?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that was sort of a complicated question, but let me answer it carefully. There are actually, what we're talking about in this bill, as I understand it, is that there are home health agencies that are both federally certified by Medicare and state licensed, and then there are home health agencies that are only state licensed. And so for the vast majority, most of the home health care agencies are state-only licensed. Therefore, there's rules and statutes in Minnesota.
And what is the difference? What do you get when you're Medicare certified?
I honestly am just not the expert on that topic, and if you have a particular question, I'd be happy to get that information.
I'll just make it even a little simpler than... from where I sit here, the rules that constrain you because somebody thought they were a good idea or passed a rule or a law, and at the state level are things that we can change if we can get enough people to agree to it. And so they're not the barrier to me, at least, and compared to a federal law that we're stuck with that we don't have power over. So as just what that operationally means is, as you chat with Senator Murphy and others about these things, we need to make things work, and so don't be afraid to not mind some of the state stuff that we could bypass to do a good thing.
Resident Brock.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for pointing that out in terms of the difficulty and the complexity of why there's all these different types of facilities, but it also goes beyond that, and this is something that we were chatting about, that it goes beyond just what types we have, but also who actually does the oversight, and there's, I think, a lot of overlap related to that. And so as we seek to try to make things work better for the individuals that we're all trying to get the system to work well for, I look forward to working on something related to this to streamline some things so that there's not two agencies or two departments that have to come to the same site to do just a little bit different things. That just doesn't make sense.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Anybody else? For Ms. Winkleman? No? All right. Yeah, does the Human Search, do you want to add anything? Okay. Do you have anything to add in terms of the difference between Medicare certified and state licensed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have that particular information.
I didn't, and I was
talking to Human Services,
too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. So, Ms. Roediger, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Roediger with Aging and Adult Services in the Department of Human Services. I can't describe any more clearly than you just heard the difference between those entities. I do know that there are federal and state regulations that require that Medicaid payment follow Medicare-certified home care agencies. So in order to change it, it's sort of a home care, change our state plan issue as opposed to go after, you know, particular services under particular financing.
So that means, what is the practical implication of that then?
Minnesota has put together services called 24-hour customized living, and we bill it as 24-hour customized living, and we sell it to the federal government as something that has only incidental nursing services involved, and it isn't billed as a fee-for-service home care. It's billed as a bundle of home and community-based services, and therefore we don't require Medicare certification to bill it. As soon as we get to the billing of a 15-minute unit or a visit by a nurse, for Medicaid eligible persons, we're required to use Medicare certified entities to do it.
Okay. Or we don't get the match.
Okay.
Representative Moffitt.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Roediger, I have no idea on this one, but if you're discharged post-hospitalization, Medicare will pick up your nursing home costs for, I think it's 30 or 60 days. Is that the same for home care, and would this be an issue in terms of if someone's post-hospital discharged, that they would need a Medicare-certified provider to get Medicare reimbursement, as
there
opposed to...
A,
Yes, Representative Blocker, there is coverage under Medicare. I don't know, again, I think it's a fairly individual, circumstantial situation for any person who's leaving that, you know, a hospitalization or a nursing home, but there is a limited benefit set under Medicare that would allow a short-term intervention in the person's home, which in this case might be a housing with services establishment. That wouldn't necessarily, you wouldn't consider wrapping up in a payment rate for that provider, but would instead be purchased outside of that rate as part of post-hospitalization.
Well, Mr. Tierman, if that's true, I'm in this era in which unfortunately have to look at absolutely everything. Does it cost a nickel more? That might have cost implications because particularly if people are on the AC program, if we can transfer any cost to Medicare, we'd want to know how much of that we could do.
And I think there's a fiscal note on this bill anyway, mm-hmm. so that's good to know about as well. Are everybody clear on this one? Yeah, okay. Do you want to, yes, please. Yeah, you're, thank you.
We, as far as the Medicare qualifiers, there are certain qualifiers, and it's only during the acute stage, and it's very limited, it's short, and not everybody qualifies, and you have to meet one qualifier, you have to be homebound to meet that Medicare home care qualifier when you're discharged from the hospital home. And then the other thing that you were talking about, what was that? Now I forgot. But anyway, so that piece is very short, and it doesn't last very long. So that and we are required by law to use those benefits. Those are the benefits of first choice when somebody is sent to us from the hospital or from the nursing home. So and all agencies should be doing that.
So the basic gist here is that you are a Class F facility that can provide these services to people. But you're not Medicare certified, and so we can't reimburse you as part of a package of services. And we're trying to allow you to get reimbursed as part of a package of services at a certain rate that you negotiate with DHS.
Correct.
For each individual, instead of having this smaller package of services and then have someone else from outside come into your
Correct.
Place to provide these other services on a fee-for-service basis.
Right.
Okay.
We're just trying to put it all together, and it's better continuity, and it is more cost-effective.
Okay.
If it's not, if we can't get federal dollars for it. So these are for the people that are chronically ill, that have chronic illnesses for long periods of time.
Okay. Thank you. Excellent. All right. So we are going to move then next, and I don't know, is Representative Norton here? She has other bills up. I think we can go ahead anyway because we're not going to actually pass the bill today. But we're gonna call it up though. Yes, I'm going to move House File 666 that it be recommended to pass and referred to Finance. Right. And we're not going to actually pass it out to Finance. So we're going to keep it here, maybe include it in a long-term care bill. There's an amendment, DE2 amendment, that I'll move as well, just to put the bill in the form that the author would like it. Any discussion on that? And that went around yesterday by email. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It's in your file. It's in your packet, yeah. It's a lot shorter. Welcome to the committee. And we're going to do about 15 minutes on this one. Hi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Darrell Shreve. I'm Vice President for Health Policy of Aging Services of Minnesota, and I will be addressing the amendment, the additional part in the Delete Everything Amendment related to small provider exemptions. And with me is Mr. Doug Beardsley, and care providers will address the toileting and repositioning issues.
Okay, let's start with that first.
Okay, and this will be much shorter than the previous bill, so we should be able to keep moving along. Again, my name is Doug Beardsley. I'm the Vice President of Member Services at Care Providers of Minnesota. Darrell and I are both up here speaking on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative, which is an imperative made up of both Care Providers of Minnesota and Aging Services of Minnesota. Many of you may know that previously as Minnesota Health and Housing Alliance. I'm also an experienced licensed nursing home administrator. Excuse me. My purpose today is quite simple. It's to explain why different yet duplicative state and federal nursing home regulations regarding the timed scheduling of bringing nursing home residents to the bathroom and repositioning them in their bed, chair, or wheelchair are unnecessary. The Minnesota Nursing Home Rules contain two sentences covering the timing of resident toileting and repositioning. Both require, with some exceptions, that residents be checked for incontinence and or toileting every 2 hours, and that if a resident is unable to reposition themselves, to be repositioned by staff every 2 hours. The 2-hour time frame is a fixed, static requirement that does not take into account the assessed individualized needs of each nursing home resident. Compliance with these state regulations is checked via a survey conducted by the Minnesota Department of Health every other year. In contrast, the federal regulations for facilities that participate in the Medicare program, which is almost all nursing facilities in the state, contain over 50 pages of requirements and survey guidance regarding assessing and individualizing the incontinence protocol for each nursing home resident, and over 2 pages specifically on repositioning residents based on their assessed individualized needs. Compliance with these federal regulations is checked via a survey conducted by the Minnesota Department of Health under contract with CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, on an every year basis, usually known as the annual survey. The federal regulations covering these two areas were completely rewritten and updated in 2005, and the Minnesota Department of Health, in conjunction with Care Providers of Minnesota and Aging Services of Minnesota, conducted multiple provider training sessions around the state so that providers could better understand the new federal regulations. The Minnesota Department of Health began surveying facilities under these new revised federal guidance on November 7, 2005. Simply put, the federal regulations are more rigorous, more grounded in research, more resident-centered and resident-specific, and more current than our outdated and non-resident-centered state regulations. Having different yet duplicative regulations does not provide any more protection to the health and safety of the nursing home residents. It only adds confusion for providers and additional costs to the survey system and to providers. Rarely, if ever, has the Minnesota Department of Health issued a state citation on these issues without also issuing an accompanying federal deficiency on the same issue. Duplicative yet different regulations are confusing. They cost time and money with no benefits to the residents we serve. This bill helps minimize regulatory duplication without removing any resident protection. Thank you.
Any questions on that piece of it? That's sections 1 and 2. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, section 3 of the bill deals with...
Oh, can I just ask on that one, on the sections 1 and 2? Is this worked out now? Is the department okay with this? Department of Health?
Department of Health? Susan? Yes, they are.
Okay, thank you. Okay, go ahead.
I felt so. I didn't feel I could answer for her.
In fact, I would say that they recommended some improvement on the language for us, which we've incorporated.
Thank you.
Section 3 of the bill deals with a small provider exemption. The purpose of the small provider exemption is to give certain small providers in rural areas sufficient flexibility so they can provide 24-hour service to EW clients. The goal is to enable those clients to live in the small housing that is attached to a care center or nursing home, rather than having to be admitted to the care center to obtain needed 24-hour services. These are typically settings where there are not alternative providers available. We have a member in Monaga and another member in Little Fork, for example, who have a care center and a small housing attached that this would benefit those clients there. The exemption is limited to providers that meet 3 criteria. They serve no more than 12 clients. This is a small operation, very small operation, no more than 12 clients. They must have either a Class A or a Class F home care license, and they must be a registered housing with services establishment. This limited group of providers could use staff from the attached nursing home to provide nighttime supervision to the clients in the attached housing, subject to the requirements that are listed in the statute. basically these would require the staff that would come over from the nursing home as necessary at nighttime would be trained and competent on all applicable home care licensing requirements. In addition to the assessment performed by the care coordinator, which determines that the individual needs 24-hour supervision as well as specific services, the provider must assess how the client's needs can be safely met. So it's up to the provider to make sure that the needs are met safely, regardless, you know, after the county does its initial determination or the managed care organization does its initial determination that the person needs the 24-hour services.
Okay, and that's important to clarify. So we're not turning over the actual initial needs assessment.
No, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
This is just to see if the needs can be safely met under this alternative.
That's correct.
Thank you.
The third point is that the client must be able to summon the nighttime staff from the attached nursing home using the provider's communication system. That'll be a call light, typically. And fourth, the nighttime staff must respond within the time frame of the client's needs for 10 minutes, whichever is less. It can never be longer than 10 minutes. So the idea here, this is really a response to the DHS policy that says that EW providers offering 24-hour supervision have to have someone on site within the customized living program that would be in the little housing 24 hours a day, and it's this person's responsibilities, primary duties, must be related to the clients in the program. The problem is the nighttime. For a small provider, 12 clients or less, the cost of having one person there overnight, you know, is really prohibitive, particularly if you only have one or two EW clients in the housing there. So what this bill would do would be permit that provider that met all these requirements, you know, to bring someone over from the nursing home on an as-needed basis. The individual calls, the client calls, the nursing assistant or an LPN would come over and provide the services for that individual and not impose the cost of an extra staff person onto the attached housing.
Representative Boston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to our guests, I'm intrigued by this because the person's been assessed to need 24-hour assistance, and most frail people that I know that are at that level don't sleep through the night. They don't sleep 12 hours. They tend to have periodic issues, and that's why they need 24-hour assistance. And so, and I understand that it's available with the nursing home attached, although this doesn't limit it to, as I read it, to a it has to be attached, because in suburban Hennepin we've had proposals that have been somewhat controversial, I know, where people have bought up several single family homes and to create an assisted living complex, and so they wouldn't have that kind of level of skilled care necessarily quite as close. But why wouldn't you not, as an extra safeguard, have it that the care assessor, rather than the provider deciding whether or not their needs can be safely met with that 10-minute window? And that would provide a little bit more arm's-length assessment of the actual needs of that particular person, and it would be the assessor who determined they needed that level of care deciding whether or not their particular situation can deal with that. I mean, you could have someone who's got, you know, periodic, very dangerous, you know, epileptic seizures who really needs a faster response versus someone for whom it's really just assistance in getting up with toileting or some other issue.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kerry Thurlow from our office will answer that question.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kerry Thurlow. I'm the Vice President of Advocacy for Aging Services in Minnesota. I'm standing here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. Representative Loffler, to your question, this concern has actually been raised by the department, and just prior to this hearing, we've been discussing that issue. I think that we are open to discussing that issue to make all parties involved. The who assesses is the question. To your question also, I think you also raised a little bit of a question whether it's just limited to attached facilities. And I think we've agreed that there's potentially some language there that we can tighten that up also to make very clear that of who we're talking about here is really the attached facility. So I think some of the concerns are coming to us today, and we've expressed openness as this bill kind of moves through the process that we'll look at tightening those two particular issues up.
Do you have more to add to what was just said, or is that the issues you had too? What? You can please come on up. Yes. I asked you to come, so there we go. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Chairman did ask me to come and testify, so that is why I'm here. We have been talking with the industry, and we hope that ultimately we could come to a successful agreement. We generally can do that. Sometimes we have to agree to disagree. But if the committee would indulge me, I would like to read my testimony as
and
fairly
if you could
short.
Just, say your name, yes.
I'm Heidi Holsey. I'm an Associate State Director for Advocacy at AARP of Minnesota. And AARP is also a member of the Seniors and Workers for Quality Coalition. AARP has always and will always support home and community-based services options that allow consumers to live in the setting of their choice when appropriate. The primary concern that we do have with this legislation is that if an individual is in need of 24-hour care, that they get that 24-hour care and it be provided on-site. We support the 24-hour care. We are opposed to attempts that would require a consumer to wait up to 10 minutes to receive this care that they might need. It is potentially dangerous in some situations. Additionally, we feel that if a staff person is assigned in an attached facility or somewhere on the campus, the people in the attached facility may need the care, and the staff person is helping the people in the other facility. So it is a staffing issue. increased reimbursement would help. It doesn't solve the staffing problems. We feel a more straightforward approach would be simply to fund that position rather than taking back some of the requirements for that. We appreciate the ability to share our concerns with you today, and we will continue to have conversations, as I said in the beginning, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Any questions, members? Okay, thank you. Any other questions people have? All right. Seeing none, we will lay House File 666 as amended on the table for future consideration. All right. Then the last one, I'll hand it over here to you. All right. And I'm just going to do it from here. So I'd like to move House File 936. What? No, I'm going to say right. House File 936. I'm going to move that it be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. And I'd like to move this one out because it has to hit some other committees members. But it's going to come back here for consideration at the end of the day with other long-term care bills. So just so people kind of know the intent here. I made my motion.
All right, Representative Houston, it's moved House File 936, that it be recommended to pass, refer to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. Representative Houston, do you want to introduce your bill, and do you have a couple of testifiers?
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead, and then we'll call up the testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And really, this bill has come out of some work that's been done by the Minnesota Board on Aging and others. It's actually been done in other states. And what it's trying to do is kind of move us again along towards the notion of building communities that will be able to deal with the age wave and getting institutions and other policies in place that will allow people to age in their communities. And it's kind of like Star Cities, or some of those other designations of municipalities, for different reasons. This would say this community, if they were to qualify as a community for a lifetime, has all the mechanisms and items basically in place that would allow people to live in their community as they age. And so it's transportation, it's housing, it's healthcare, it's volunteer opportunities, nutrition and congregate dining, those types of things. What the bill does is it kind of sets out the broad parameters and then establishes the task force to come back to us next year with how we would actually implement this through the Department of Employment and Economic Development and the Minnesota Board on Aging in cooperation with each other. So I'd like, Don, do you want to... So, Ms. Chair, if Ms. Simonson could...
Okay, we've got Dawn Simonson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Dawn Simonson, and I'm the director of the Metropolitan Area Agency on Aging, but I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Leadership Council on Aging. Just a word or two about the Leadership Council on Aging. We organized in 2004 as a network of home and community-based organizations and others to really provide a consensus voice, again, for home and community-based services. We currently have 16 members, and we represent nonprofit health, social service membership, and advocacy organizations in Minnesota whose missions are to serve seniors and family caregivers. And together, we represent over 500,000 older adults. We provide services and housing to 450,000 seniors, support 130,000 family caregivers, and engage more than 27,000 volunteers. Our members include statewide home health care, housing, nursing homes, physician and hospice associations, AARP and the Minnesota Senior Federation, the Alzheimer's Association, Minnesota's Area Agencies on Aging, and service providers including DARTS, Volunteers of America, and Lutheran Social Service. And the council formed really to speak boldly about the issues important to Minnesota seniors and their families and about what Minnesota faces in light of a dramatically growing older population. You can think of us as your conscience related to our growing older population. And the proposal today, House File 936, seeks to establish really a vision where Minnesota's communities embrace and prepare for our growing older population through multi-sector intentional planning and development framed as communities for a lifetime. The proposal really, these are our initial thoughts. We welcome input and negotiation to refine and shape the proposal going forward. The legislation would establish a task force led by the Board on Aging to develop recommendations for a process in which communities could be formally designated a community for a lifetime. And through this process, local governments will make planning for an older population a priority, something we feel is very important. But they need to build a shared vision with their residents, their business community, and other stakeholders. Communities currently have mechanisms such as local municipal comprehensive plans that could be modified to enhance infrastructure planning to better meet community needs. House File 936 defines some core factors that ideally would be present across all of our communities to both engage older people and maximize their contributions to community life and to support them as they age and become frail. It's very important that we think about older people and the assets, the talents, the experience, the education that they bring, as well as think about them as they age and grow frail. So this is a proposal that addresses both scenarios. The factors that we think are important for communities to include are volunteerism, leadership and paid work, affordable housing options including assisted living, wellness, recreation and lifelong learning, transportation and other support to preserve community mobility, access to technology, goods and services, age-competent public safety and emergency services, flexible community-based services delivered at home, personal assistance to navigate our complex system of services and caregiver support. We really have to think differently about planning at the community level. Minnesota is experiencing a major demographic change in its population. In the next 25 years, our older population will double. Older people will outnumber children and youth, and such a major shift has never happened before in our society. And again, this represents opportunities, but also represents many challenges. This age wave will deeply impact health care, aging services, transportation, recreation, public safety, housing, employment, and education. And these domains of community life are all interdependent. And most communities have not begun to determine how they will adapt to the changing needs driven by demographics. The kinds of changes that will be essential will likely take years to implement. It's important that we start today. if these changes are not made, our social, physical, and civic infrastructures can be overwhelmed. Minnesota's communities aren't prepared, and we must think about implementing planning in an organized, informed, and thoughtful way so that community preparedness efforts can begin soon. By establishing a Communities for a Lifetime approach, Minnesota can begin to assess the age readiness of our communities and to identify solutions that will help communities transform policies, infrastructures, and services. The proposed initiative can build on proven models of lifespan, civic, and asset-based community development to create and implement a new model of community action. It'll be necessary to work in cooperation with state, regional, and local agencies to build the capacity of communities that will meet the needs of older adults across the continuum of services. Now, the Leadership Council on Aging, of course, understands that we're dealing with a serious economic downturn and a large deficit. We ask, however, that we take small steps today to put us on course to address, in an integrated fashion, the opportunities and challenges of elder population growth, new technologies, economic development, inaccessible community facilities, and multi-generational neighborhoods. We must encourage communities to assess and put into place programs, policies, and services that address the needs of older adults and their family caregivers by partnering to develop action plans to ensure that communities are livable for all ages, to assist communities to harness the talent and experience of older adults to contribute to the community, and to provide access to innovative community development tools and service models. And the Leadership Council on Aging believes that we all have the same goal. We want our communities to be good places to grow up and grow old, thus Communities for a Lifetime. It's essential to deploy resources now to obtain this objective in the face of massive demographic change. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think before we go to questions, although I don't see any yet, I understand there's a minor oral amendment. Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I've talked with the author about this. I think it's a great idea, and I think we ought to encourage communities to plan. And I'd like all parts of the state to be able to have Communities for a Lifetime, and so what I'm going to offer is actually two small oral amendments, and I'll tell you, one will be on line 1.18. For purposes of the subdivision, Communities for a Lifetime means, and I would insert the word counties, comma, municipality, statutory at home, and that would be to address the situation of the sparsely populated rural counties in our state for whom having this in every small community isn't feasible, but in a county, working together across that whole area could meet these various needs. And so I think that that option should be available in the rural area. Maybe we should move on that first.
Okay. All right. You want to vote on these separately, Representative Loeffler?
Well, I could jump together if you want.
We're going to.
Okay. If you'd like me to go on, the second one would be on line 1.22. Under C, the opportunities extended, and I would insert within a reasonable distance to senior residents by Communities for a Lifetime must include. And that's to address the issue of actually in the metropolitan area. We have lots of little small bedroom communities that might not even have a workplace, let alone figure out how to offer workplace opportunities. Or you have communities that already in the metro area overbuilt with certain types of senior housing, and you don't need the next suburb down the line, maybe a mile and a half away, adding another piece of housing development when there isn't a demographic demand, but it would be within a reasonable distance of that community. So they could still say our community is a community of lifetime, even though every single one of these long list items aren't within our small borders in a particular community. And with that, I would take questions on the amendment.
All right. Actually, Representative Loeffler, it seems to me that there's enough difference between the two that maybe we should just take them separately. So let's start with Representative Loeffler moves an oral amendment on line 1.18 after the word means, insert the word counties, comma. Is that correct, Representative Loeffler? Okay. Is there any discussion to that? Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my concern would be if the intent is really to create awareness for these cities and make them like, you know, pattern them after like you said, the star cities. Are we diluting this if we allow, you know, now the counties, the Communities for a Lifetime, the city within the counties, the Communities for a Lifetime? That would be my fear, that we're
almost diluting the awareness effort.
Representative Lawler, do you want to respond?
Madam Chair, I'm in, we could put rural, but then you'd have to probably defend or define rural. I mean, maybe it's just when this bill comes back to us, we can kind of wrestle with that a little bit. But the intent is it may not be possible in a small northwestern county to be able to do this on any other basis, and for them to be able to market themselves to potential retirees who might move to their lake cabin or something, and to say, we are a county for a lifetime, and here's our array of services to seniors who might choose to live at our borders, might be a source of community pride and promotion that just wouldn't be available on a city-by-city basis within any one of those small towns to support this long list.
Let's see, I think Representative Abler?
I'll just give Dustin Thiessen some time on this. Is that fit, that seems like it fits where you're going. Are you comfortable with it?
I'm comfortable with the amendment. No, I mean, we'll take into that comment into consideration, though, because I hadn't thought about that, but I'm comfortable putting the amendment on.
All right, ready to vote, members? Okay, all those in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
All right, the amendment is adopted. All right, we'll move on to the second oral amendment, which is on line 1.22, after the word extended, insert within a reasonable distance. I think Representative Loeffler already discussed this. Is there any discussion to it? Representative Powell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Loeffler, what is a reasonable number?
Madam Chair and Representative Powell, that is why we have an advisor group that's going to come back with the interpretation.
All right, any other questions or comments on the oral amendment? Okay, Representative Thiessen, did you want to
I'm fine
comment?
With
it. Okay. All right, all those in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right, the second oral amendment is adopted. All right, members, any other questions or comments on the bill? All right, Representative Thiessen, do you want to have the final word on this?
Two things. One, I just want to say this is voluntary, so we're not imposing this on anybody. And the second thing is, I think, to echo what Ms. Simonson said, is we need to start today. You know, this isn't a huge step, but it is a step in the right direction of kind of starting to plan for that. So I would, this is maybe something we can do this year to kind of move us in the direction we have to head.
All right. Representative Gottwald, usually when the author says his thing, it's time to vote, but I'll give you a little leeway this time. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually a co-author on the bill, so I saw that.
Oh, well, then we'll waive the rule.
I saw that the chief author was willing to let me say. I just wanted to comment. I went through the era of the Star City in economic development, and I thought the best part about it and what attracted me to this bill, this legislation, is it's the process as much as anything else. These communities having to think through the steps that it takes to become good, in that case, in economic development, in this case, in being communities that are supportive and open to elderly people living in their community. And we're going to have to do more of the delivery of services to elderly people in the home, in the community, with community resources. This is absolutely where we need to be focusing some of our efforts. So I realize this may seem like a feel-good bill to some people, but this process could actually be very beneficial in building capacity across the state. So hope people will support it.
All right. Representative Thiessen renews his motion that House File 936 be recommended to pass, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? No. The bill is passed. Thank you, members. And
can I just say one thing before we adjourn? And that is to remind folks that, especially kind of for smaller, more narrowly targeted bills, but in general, try to get them in by next Monday, which means dropping them Friday. Okay, so that, I mean, bills that come in after that, we are going to have to start prioritizing some stuff. Okay?
All right. So, thank you, members.
Thank you. And for people in the public.